Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 106. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Ahoy!
And we are back, of course, to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We were gone last week, we were very busy, but now we are back to talk about the latest news, some new releases, and this week's big topic, which is going to be looking back on The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 6 months after the game's release and seeing how it's still holding up. However, before we get to that, let's kick things off with some game impressions, specifically of a recent Switch release, Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Let's do it.
For those of you who are unaware, this is a goofy, colorful, turn-based combat strategy game published by Ubisoft, developed by Ubisoft, featuring Mario, Luigi, Peach, Yoshi, and then Rabbid versions of all of those characters. It's got lots of weapons, it's got a bunch of character skills, and it's got some wacky story about the Rabbids, like, shattering the reality of the Mushroom Kingdom, and I know Bowser Jr. is in there. Mm-hmm. And I have not actually picked up the retail version of this game. I played it back at E3, but I haven't played the final game. However, Pete, you have been playing it, so I would love to hear your thoughts.
I have, Chris. So far, yeah, I've been probably played it about 10, 15 hours. I beat the first two worlds.
Wow. Cool. That's out of four total, right?
You know, honestly, I don't know, but there are about 8 or 9 missions per world. So it's a good amount of playtime. And then, you know, there's, of course, a lot of things you can go back and try to, you know, get a better score for each level.
What happens if you do that?
You know, honestly, I don't know. The main benefit is that you get extra coins, and those coins you could turn to buy better weapons.
All right. Nice, nice.
But there are a bunch of weapons, you know, going into that, there are, you have a primary weapon, a secondary weapon. Mm-hmm. Not all the different types of characters use the same types of weapons. So there's a breadth of weapons and things you can buy for each specific character.
And each character has unique skills, right?
Yeah, that's right. And there is like a skill tree. It's kind of cool because it's not like, mm-hmm. you know, some skill trees are really unforgiving and you like make one mistake and you're kind of like SOL for the rest of the time you play. Luckily, in this one, you can pretty much re-roll at any moment. If you decide you've like spec'd the wrong way, you can go, well, you know, some of the characters are natural progression to, like, if I don't know if anyone's played strategy games before, but
I'm sure some people have.
I'm sure. If you, you know, Mario's like sort of a tank character, you can take a lot of hits. Luigi's a bit more like assassin, sniper type character.
I always knew he had something like that in him.
Yeah, he even has a skill that kind of gives him a death stare. I forget what it's called, but it's nice. It's not quite Death Stare, but it's definitely a nod to that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, honestly, more than anything, what I'd like to convey is that this game just feels like it's like made with love. Like the first cutscene you see is like this just really fun CG cutscene that's like very not Nintendo in a way. Like you just don't see them do a lot of you don't see them do a lot of these like high production CG cutscenes all the time using Mario and characters. But essentially what it is you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's kind of this mashup. It turns out this programmer has these glasses that if she looks at two different things, it just combines them. And all of a sudden mm-hmm. that gets out of hand and the Rabbids become different pieces of the Mushroom Kingdom.
Weird.
Yeah, anyways, it's super cool. The story's really fun. I mean, obviously it takes kind of a back burner to the game in general.
Sure.
The strategy portion's really satisfying, I think. It's not quite like anything I've really played. I know I've heard people reference it to XCOM.
I've heard that a lot as well.
Yeah, I've never played XCOM. The big thing that I heard is different is that, like, you know, you have percentages of what you're going to, if you're actually going to hit this person or not. But in this game, they simplify it. It's like you have a 100% chance, a 50% chance, or a 0% chance.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Anyway, it's really fun. And in using some of the levels, at first, you know, I thought maybe it was going to be a little too easy. But the difficulty ramps up, in my opinion, perfectly. You can kind of get stuck every now and then. But like the most I ever played a level now is about 2 or 3 times.
Okay.
And even then, sometimes it's just getting by the skin of your teeth, only to like maybe figure out how you could do it better the next time.
So are you just playing in normal mode? I understand there is an easy mode if you're having difficulty.
Yeah, you know, I saw that when you go to a replay level, maybe it's the first time even, but there is an option. You can hit a button while the level loads, and you basically, enemies get like half health or you get double health. I can't remember what
I think you get an additional 50% health is what I understand.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, so I haven't tried that out yet. Didn't need it. Kind of wanted to, you know, power through.
Yep, understandable.
And it hasn't been too bad. I'm not going to say it's a cakewalk. Because you get to these levels where all of a sudden then they start using some of these abilities and things you learned against you.
Oh, yeah? Like what?
Like, for example, you can get powers that have, like, you shoot honey or you shoot ink. And those all have different status effects. Like, honey makes the character stuck. They're unable to move the next turn.
Okay.
Ink makes them unable to use specific attacks. So you just aren't able to use them that turn. It's really fun to use it on the enemy, but when the enemy starts using it on you, it's not ideal.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, but it's cool. Some of the characters combine to do different attacks. You can jump off of each other and gain different advantages. Basically, the level layouts, you can get to different elevations by jumping off other characters.
Oh, yeah. That was one thing I remember from the E3 demo. I also remember that there was a lot of emphasis on, like, hiding behind cover and jumping out to make attacks. Does that persist throughout the entire game, where sort of this cover-based gameplay is very important?
Yeah, cover is pretty much the name of the game. You really have to think about where you're going to move. And then also, a lot of the cover gets destroyed. So if you're hiding behind, like, a brick, it's only going to last for a couple turns. It blows up if somebody throws a grenade or something like that.
I never thought we'd be talking about throwing grenades in Mario games.
You know, it's funny. That is kind of weird, right? In the game, you could almost say that they fire guns.
Mm-hmm.
They're really toy versions of weapons. Like, there's like a bazooka that one of the rabbits gets.
Is there a Super Scope 6 or a Zapper?
You know, I haven't seen that, but there are some really funny names. Like, I saw there's like a rubber ducky that looks like Sam Fisher.
Okay.
And of course, that's Ubisoft's property. So they have
they
have this duck, and I forget what it's called, but it's hilarious. It's something about, I think it's called the Fisher King or something. Yeah, it's got the little tri-cam on it.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely sounds weird.
But in general, you know, it feels very replayable.
That's good.
Yeah, there's some things that some skills you learn at the end of each level that you definitely could use in the level you just completed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little annoying because you're like, well, I would like to be able to just, you know, push
too bad I didn't have that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. So it's kind of designed in a way that makes you want to go back and give a level another once over. I've also seen that there's this area where it seems like you can play two-player.
Oh, uh-huh.
I hope I'm not making that up, but yeah, it's like this little area where it looks like there are some missions that you have to play two-player.
Well, I know there is co-op in the game. I wasn't aware if it was there from the get-go or if it's something you have to add on separately.
Yeah, it opens up after World 1, and you basically, it sounds like you can play some missions together with people, but they're specifically designed for co-op, so it's not like you can just play any level.
That makes sense.
But so far, really enjoying it.
All right, awesome. Now, would you say it feels like an authentic Mario game? Would Mario fans be happy with it?
You know, it's kind of weird in the sense that it feels like a Nintendo game made by someone else.
Well, that's kind of what it is.
But in a, but
don't
in
know
the,
what that means.
In the best way possible. It's almost like, you know, if you gave somebody your, like, Ferrari and you were like, here, take really good care of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they're just, like, super excited to be working on this property. They're super excited to be, like, you know, working on these character models and soundtrack. And, like, and it just kind of shows. Like, everything in is just, like, really high polished, but also just, you could tell it was handled with the utmost care to make it a good game.
All right, cool. Good to hear. A couple more questions. One, at the end of the E3 demo, I encountered a DK rabbit. What's up with that guy? How does he fit in?
So in each world, there's a mid-boss and an end-boss.
Uh-huh.
And he is the, spoilers, end boss of the first world.
Okay.
Yeah. And he actually has some pretty cool gameplay mechanics, but you don't get to play him as him, sadly.
Oh, yeah. Who is in your party currently?
In my party, I have everyone but Yoshi and Rabbit Yoshi.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't even know they were in there until I went to the website and I realized they really don't, they're not in there at all. So it is kind of a big spoiler that.
Ever since the game was announced, it was common knowledge that they were in there. But it's interesting they haven't shown up yet and you're already two worlds in.
Well, you're common knowledge.
So are you going to get the season pass for $20?
You know, I was looking at that recently. It's right on the main menu. And then I went to the eShop and it had it. For download.
It adds 8 new main weapons, 8 new secondary weapons, and then there's also some new solo challenges, new co-op missions, and new story content, but none of that stuff except for the weapons are currently available.
You know, I'm not totally convinced yet. I want to think that I might get it, but we'll see. We'll see how I feel at the end. I'm on the fence. I could see going for it, but maybe not.
All right. Well, anyway, it's good to know you're really enjoying it so far, and I'm glad to hear that it's, you know, sort of living up to its pedigree.
Yeah, and I would say that if you aren't a huge strategy fan, it might be still worth giving a shot just because it's, you know, if you like the subject matter, if you like Mario, the rabbits are definitely kind of weird. I almost think of them as like as like minions.
Well, yes. I mean, that's exactly what they are like.
It's kind of funny that like minions came out after rabbits, but like... no one.
Yeah, I feel like minions are rabid knockoffs, to be honest.
Yeah, and they really are, but like superior in the sense that they've like, you know, actually made money.
Although there's been like 45 rabid games or something.
Has there really?
I think I'm exaggerating.
Well, anyway,
there's probably been 10 though.
Well, so anyway, it, you know,
at least six.
They use it really cleverly. I could go into a little bit of a plot device if you want to hear it.
Go ahead, I don't mind.
So don't listen if you don't want any spoilers, but basically one of the rabbits gets this like headset on his face and it becomes basically conjoined to him, it looks like. And
gross.
Everything he looks at, like if he looks at two things, they become conjoined. So yeah, so it's kind of
what you were alluding to earlier.
It's this little mashup. Yeah, it's pretty funny. And then of course Bowser Jr. finds him and uses it to his advantage. Yeah, in his clown boat, no less.
Mm-hmm. I see. Very interesting. Yeah, I have to admit, you know, I haven't got this yet. Mostly because there's been so many other games that have come out recently and are going to be coming out soon. And, you know, I do like strategy somewhat. I mean, Fire Emblem is great, mm-hmm. and I like a lot of other strategy titles. But this one I just was kind of on the fence about. I just feel like I need to play it a little bit more to know for sure if it's one that I'm going to want to buy and, you know, keep on playing and playing, you know, for the duration of the adventure. But it's great to hear that you're digging it so far.
Yeah, and I think this comes out at a really good time where if you're not a huge multiplayer gamer mm-hmm. and you didn't really pick up ARMS or Splatoon 2 is not really your thing, I think that this could definitely be like the game that tied you over until Odyssey. So it is kind of a good time that it comes out. And super surprise. Like it is amazing that it got announced at E3 and now it's out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yep.
All right. Good to know. All right. Well, let's move along from there and discuss some recent news. Specifically, last week, Nintendo had their Nindies Showcase, and they unveiled a whole bunch of upcoming games that are going to be coming out on the Switch.
Man, did they.
Yeah, there is just a ton of stuff, and I think it would take, you know, a long time to go through all of it, so I figure we'll just focus on some of the highlights here, and one of those definitely would have to be the latest update to Shovel Knight. It is called Shovel Knight King of Cards. It is the long-awaited King Knight campaign, which is a prequel in which you play as the King Knight, and you must defeat three other kings, and that explains how he became a member of the Order of No Quarter. According to Yacht Club Games, this includes 4 all-new worlds and 30 all-new courses, and I'm not really sure what that means, like what is a course, what is a world. But anyway, it sounds like there's going to be lots of great new content, new areas to play through. He's going to have, you know, his own unique set of moves. He's got his bash attack, a shield ability, a big hammer he swings around. Mm-hmm. Going to be new armor and new bosses, and then there's going to be these card battles, which I'm not sure how they're really integrated into the campaign. Is it a mandatory thing? Is it separate? But it's pretty cool that it's going to be in there. It's definitely something different that we have not seen in Shovel Knight before.
Yeah, this game looks super fun, and it does. You know, Yacht Club Games really hasn't let me down yet with the Shovel Knight series, and I just don't imagine them starting here.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And this game has rats. It has lots of rats. You know, in King Knight's level, he had those propeller rats, which mm-hmm. I've always liked to refer to as the flying roto rats. But now they're like these clusters of flying rats. And apparently he has an ability where he can like sick his pet rat on enemies. Like if you look up in the HUD, you can see he has this little purple rat wearing a crown. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the name of that ability is yet, but I'm calling him Sir Squeaks a lot.
You need help, you know that.
Well, that's beside the point. But yeah, that looks really great, and it is coming out in early 2018. Looks fantastic.
Now, Chris, I think we would both be remiss if we didn't mention the other exciting piece of this that I know has got your little fingers tingling. I know it.
Oh, you better believe it. That's right. In addition to the update to the game, there are indeed new Shovel Knight Amiibo.
Oh, man.
Yep, there is an Amiibo 3-pack on the way with all 3 of the playable Order of No Quarter characters, Plague Knight, Spectre Knight, and King Knight. And they haven't gone into all the details about what these do, mm-hmm. but I know they unlock exclusive armor, they unlock a couple amiibo challenge stages, and they let you summon amiibo fairies,
ooh.
Such as the Fairy of Chivalry.
Of course.
Don't know what a Fairy of Chivalry is, or what else the amiibo fairies might be, or what they do. They say it won't interfere with the gameplay in any way, so I'm curious. But they will work on not only the Switch version, but also Wii U and 3DS. No release date on these guys yet, but obviously I am super excited. Cannot wait to add these amiibo to my collection. Shovel Knight will no longer be lonely on the shelf. You'll have a couple of guys in there from the same game to be there with it.
Now, have you seen the promotional video that they released for this?
Yes, I have.
Oh, man. Every time I see it, well, I've only seen it twice. Every time I see
it. You imagine it was me?
You
imagine that's what I do?
I like,
walking around my apartment, looking
that.
Longingly.
I really can't unsee
all my amiibo.
Yeah, I could just see you like sort of Vanna Whiting your little amiibos on your shelf, oohing and aahing. And
it's mostly true, except the amiibo display that was used in that video is way cleaner and nicer than what I have in my apartment.
So if you haven't seen that video, please just go watch it and then just imagine Chris Hoffman rolling around on the floor with his amiibo.
Yeah, it's pretty much dead on.
Mm-hmm. It's a little disturbing.
Okay, moving on from there to another upcoming game that was shown on the Nindie Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
We have Travis Strikes Again, No More Heroes.
Oh, man.
Strangely, I don't think it's technically an indie game since it's got a publisher.
Yeah.
It's published by Marvelous.
Yeah,
and
I noticed
that. Being made by Grasshopper.
Right.
So I don't know why it's even in this batch, but whatever. It's a freaking new No More Heroes game, obviously featuring Travis Touchdown, and they haven't said a whole lot about it,
mm-hmm.
but it's a new game of the series. It looks freaking cool.
Right, and it's been a long time since we've seen something from Suda 51 on Nintendo platform, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a new No More Heroes game since the original Wii.
Right.
He's done some other stuff since then. But yeah, it's great to see him back on Nintendo. It's great to see this franchise come back. And it certainly has an indie connection, even if it's not technically an indie game.
Right.
Because he's collaborating with other indie game publishers,
right.
including probably Shovel Knight, but definitely Hotline Miami.
Yep.
And the storyline of this game is that Travis gets sucked into this phantom game console called the Death Drive Mark II, and he has to defeat the 6 games and their bosses, which sounds absolutely ridiculous, and that's exactly what I want out of a No More Heroes game.
But yeah, this looks cool, and I love that the Hotline Miami tie-in. I'm really curious to see what other crossovers might exist.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if you noticed this, but it seems like this isn't actually a No More Heroes Part 3. This is just sort of an offshoot. Did you wonder that?
I don't know. I mean, certainly it seems like it's going in a bit of a different direction with this whole indie spin and, being sucked into the game world. That's certainly different from before.
Yeah.
But, whether it is really No More Heroes 3 or it is just a spinoff of some sort, doesn't matter to me. It seems very cool, and I'm looking forward to finding out more about it. Game comes out in 2018, next year. So, yeah, that should be a lot of fun.
Also, methinks they might have steered clear of calling this one Travis Strikes Back. But maybe that's just me.
I don't know. I feel like that's something they would actually perhaps try to embrace. I mean, he's got a freaking lightsaber, so, you know.
I know. I'm wondering if that was like their lawyers being like, please don't call it that.
Could be. Hmm. Could be. Okay, so also coming on the way to Switch, this one is coming next year. It is Super Meat Boy Forever, another hardcore platformer from the folks at Team Meat. It's all about jumping, sliding, and getting chopped up by saw blades, now with air punches and slide kicks. And apparently it's called Super Meat Boy Forever because you can keep playing forever, and it gets harder and harder every time.
Sweet.
Doesn't that sound great?
Yeah, that's exactly what I've always wanted.
Yeah, I mean, Super Meat Boy was pretty freaking hard to begin with.
Right.
But now, apparently, every time you beat a stage, well, then, the next time you play it, it'll be even tougher.
Hmm.
So,
did you notice that it looks kind of like an Endless Runner? I was kind of, like, went back and watched the video a few times, and you just kind of get that feeling that, like, I don't know, in the original Super Meat Boy, sometimes you were on a screen that was just maybe one screen, and maybe they're not showing all that much of it at this moment, but what I got the feeling of is that he's constantly running to the right, and he's constantly jumping through little scenarios of punching things. And I don't know if that's me just reading into it, but that was just kind of my takeaway.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but you're kind of right. It does kind of look that way. Yeah, it's a good question. Are you constantly on the move like that?
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of, you know, hope you're not.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it certainly had, you know, a bit of a different aesthetic and a bit of a different play style going on there.
I did notice the art style is a little bit different than the original as well.
However, it turns out I'm certainly looking forward to finding out more about that one as well.
Again, I love their intro, the whole explanation of, what was it, Nugget?
Yes, that is their child who has been kidnapped. Meat Boy and Bandage Girl apparently had a child named Nugget, but Dr. Fetus is back and kidnaps him and apparently steals him away at the end of every level just when you think you've rescued him again. Another title that was announced is Dragon Marked for Death, which is a 2D side-scrolling action RPG from Intacreates.
Mm-hmm.
That is the company responsible for the Mega Man Zero games, among other titles.
Ah.
It is up for 4 players simultaneously and includes multiple character classes like Warrior, Shinobi, and Witch. As Intacreates is known for, it has gorgeous, beautiful 2D visuals. And, you know, just looking at the game, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the exploration-style Castlevania games, mm-hmm. which is not a bad thing at all. I mean, those are action RPGs also.
Yeah, I mean, it looks kind of like a cool platform hack and slash.
Yes.
Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, it's a hack and slash type of action RPG, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I'm definitely down to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the fact that that developer has made quite a few very good games gives me high hopes for this one. You know, Mighty No. 9 aside. But usually their stuff is pretty darn good. So they say this one is coming out in winter. They haven't said specifically if that means late this year or early next year. But yeah, winter is when this one is supposed to hit.
Yeah, I think some of the games from the original Nindie video have to come out first.
Yeah, that's true. And speaking of which, that was another game that was shown at this event. We finally got an update on SteamWorld Dig 2, which made its debut at the previous Nindie Showcase, and now we know it is coming out on September 21st, just a few weeks from now.
Yeah, that's good.
And, you know, when they announced this game initially, they're like, oh, it's coming out first on Nintendo systems. Yeah, go Switch. And now we know it's coming out on September 21st for us, and that comes out on other platforms like 5 days later or something. So, yeah, that's a heck of an exclusivity window to be bragging about. But hey, whatever. I'm just glad it's coming and that it's almost here. So that should be cool.
Now, you played the original, right?
I did. Not a ton. To be honest, I hadn't really played it until I found out that the sequel was coming. And I'm like, you know, I should probably check this out. And I started playing it on Wii U or something like that. But yeah, it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I bought it for 3DS and I played maybe like 3 or 4 hours into it and then I stopped playing it. And I'm kind of regretting that I did. I really enjoyed it when I played it. And maybe someday I'll go back and play it. But we'll see. I am looking forward to this. It just looks like a pretty version of the original with like extra mechanics. So hopefully it should be good.
Yeah, I've certainly got high hopes for it. So I feel like those are probably the biggest games that were shown at the Nindie Showcase. Is there anything else that caught your eye? There are lots of other games.
Yeah, I definitely have a couple. I'll just run through a quick list I got.
Sure.
Mom Hid My Game looks really, really dumb, but also kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hidden object game, which in general, I don't like those kinds of games. I get bored with them very quickly.
Right.
But this one sounds quirky enough that it could be amusing. What else?
Golf Story looks super promising.
That's the 2D golf RPG. It sounds pretty crazy. And sounds like a lot of fun for people who are fans of, like the old Mario Golf RPG stuff that they don't do anymore.
Yeah, and I really love the art style, but it seems to be a completely new developer. So I'm kind of excited to see how that goes and if they're capable of making a good game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely looks interesting.
I also think Floor Kids has some potential. I like rhythm games, so if they kind of, you know, nail that, I can't really tell how to play it from just watching.
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued by that as well. It's this breakdancing game with a very unique art style, but I have no idea how you play it, judging from what they've shown or anything I've read about it. So I'm very curious as to whether it'll be good from a gameplay perspective. But yeah, it's certainly interesting and different.
Yeah, and then Kentucky Route Zero.
Oh, yeah.
TV edition, whatever that means.
Well, it means they're combining all 5 of the acts that have been previously released. You know, I'm familiar with this game as like coming out on iOS, and they've slowly been releasing the chapters over the last few years. But I guess TV edition means it's going to be you know, all in company. It's going to include all five acts and be released all at once. And of course, you can, you know, play it on your TV thanks to Switch.
Well, I'm a huge fan of point and click games in general, and this one kind of has that cool lo-fi aesthetic. I'm pretty excited for that as well.
I'm intrigued. Definitely intrigued.
And then lastly, I would actually go with Morphe's Law, which looks ridiculous.
Really?
But I like...
That's the bizarre 4-on-4 third-person shooter that seems to be inspired by Lucha Libre.
Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of, like... It's a really interesting take on, like, physics in shooters. And I like the idea that, like... If people keep shooting the crap out of you, you just become really small. And then conversely, if you're really good, you take up half the screen. So I'm willing to give that one a shot. If it comes out for the right price and I see a good review, I might pick that up.
It definitely seems strange. Probably not my kind of thing, but I think it's fair to say there's not going to be much else like it.
And then one last dark horse, not really sure what to make of it, but Polybridge.
Oh, okay.
Kind of looks like a World of Goo sort of esque yes. type
yep, yep,
game.
Yep, very much. Yeah, it's very physics based. In this case, you're building bridges to solve puzzles.
Yeah, that looks like it has
it's
a lot
very
of
World of Goo,
a
actually.
Lot of promise too, with, like, you know, some of the physics that I saw going on in the demo looked pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally.
But that's about it for me. Anything else on your end?
Well, Earth Atlantis looks pretty interesting. Mm. That's like this monochromatic 2D underwater shooter that's supposed to be coming out this fall. I'm a little intrigued by that one.
Yep.
But even more than that, there were actually a couple indie games that I found out about that were not on the Nindie Showcase
right.
that seem very, very exciting. One of those is Save Me, Mr. Taco. That's not taco like the kind you get at Taco Bell. It's taco as in the Japanese word for octopus. And this game is a total Game Boy homage, being published by Nicholas, and it reeks Game Boy in every possible way. It's got, you know, only four colors. It's got Game Boy style sound, Game Boy style sprites, and it is this octopus platformer where you shoot ink to turn enemies into platforms. And it's also very reminiscent of Kirby in that you can acquire different hats that give you new abilities. Like, there's going to be 50 different hats, like an archer hat that lets you shoot arrows, and I'm not sure what all the other hats are going to be. They promise there's going to be 19 bosses, 6 huge worlds, and 16 dungeons to explore.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be out towards the end of this year, and it looks pretty darn amazing. I'm very excited for that one.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen the trailer for that, you really should go watch it. It's pretty cool. I like how they kind of like segue into the Game Boy world.
Yeah, yeah, it is pretty cool. I don't like the big bubbles that were appearing over the screens. It makes it hard to kind of tell what's going on. But still, it's a pretty neat trailer, and the game does look great. And then the other one that I just heard about is called The Takeover, which is a side-scrolling beat-em-up, you know, in the vein of Streets of Rage or Final Fight, and I love those kinds of games. And this is from developer Pelican 13, who has been working on the 90s Arcade Racer or 90s Super GP, which has, you know, been in development for ages, and who knows whenever it's going to come out. It would be nice if that would come out first before this one. But still, I do love these side-scrolling beat-em-ups, and supposedly it is heading to Switch as well as Steam. And, you know, I just like to see people punch in the face in that old-school type of way. So, yeah, totally looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
Very intrigued. I hope it actually does come out.
Yeah, that one looks fun. Like a cool old throwback.
Definitely. And then what was that other game you were telling me about? Away. That's the anime-inspired first-person adventure game. That looks pretty darn crazy, too.
Yeah, I think the full title is Away, Journey to the Unexpected. It looked pretty cool.
Yep, that's right.
It's this, you know, as you mentioned, a first-person style game with anime-style graphics, which I don't think has been done, but it looks cool.
Yeah, it looks quirky and colorful and weird and... I mean, even though they call it a first-person shooter, none of the stuff they show is actually shooting. It's like you're hitting people with a stick and stuff. So it's like a first-person stick-whacking game.
Right. Like, but, wait, didn't they already make Minecraft?
I think this one probably carves its own niche. Very intriguing looking.
Looks cool, though. I mean, it's more than anything, it's fun to see all these games coming out for Switch.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them look very, very promising.
Yeah, absolutely. It is great to see all of these games coming out on Switch in the not-too-distant future. And speaking of exciting upcoming Switch games, Nintendo announced, I guess sometime last week, that there is going to be a special edition for Fire Emblem Warriors on Switch.
Mm.
That includes the game itself, a 3-CD soundtrack, a poster showing what games the characters are from, and a slipcase that contains character art cards. This is only for the Switch version. It is not for the new 3DS version. Pete, do you have any interest in this? Does it make you more likely to buy this game?
No, not so much. But, you know, it's always nice to see these kind of special editions, especially Nintendo's not really known for them.
They aren't, but they've been doing a lot of them for Fire Emblem. I think they did one for Awakening, they did one for Fates, they did one for Echoes, and now they've got this one. So they are all in when it comes to the special editions for Fire Emblem. And, you know, I was just telling myself I shouldn't get any more of these special editions because they're just filling up my apartment and I got no space for them.
And how'd that go?
And then this thing was announced. I pre-ordered it. Yeah, I did. I mean, I've decided I don't need, like, any big, weird figurines or things like that. But this is some pretty good stuff. I mean, a 3-CD soundtrack set seems pretty reasonable. I do love game soundtracks. And then the poster and the art cards aren't anything too outlandish, so... Yeah, for an extra $20, doesn't seem too bad for me. And the last time I checked, it was still up for pre-order on GameStop. Amazon sold out pretty quick, but if you are interested in this, I think you can still grab a pre-order at some sites.
You know, I've just never been a huge special edition guy. I always just feel like they're just trying to milk my, you know, milk me for a few more a few more bucks. But whatever, like, to each their own. I'm glad that it exists for the people that would like it. And of course, like you said, you know, it is interesting that Nintendo is doing it for certain titles, and I believe that Fire Emblem is a series that they kind of know who's going to buy Fire Emblem, and it's definitely people that are a little more hardcore gamery.
Yep, definitely. And it's just nice to see that series continuing to get that level of support. So
yeah,
they suckered me this time, but we'll see. We'll see about next time. We'll see.
Imagining you shaking your fist at the sky.
Yep, my ass couldn't resist. Now, there's one other sort of special edition game announcement that caught my attention lately, and that is a Super NES Street Fighter II reissue from IM8-Bit. So, in collaboration with Capcom, they have unveiled a reproduction of the Super NES cartridge. It's not licensed by Nintendo.
Wow.
It is limited to 5,500 copies. That's 4,500 red cartridges, like Ryu's headband, and then 1,000 of them in a translucent glow-in-the-dark Blanca green. So in addition to the game, it comes with a fancy box, a fancy instruction booklet, and some retro pack-in surprises, which look like art cards and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And it sells for $100. What do you think of this?
I mean, it's kind of awesome, right? It kind of makes sense, I think. I don't know who's buying it.
But people are, and it's already sold out. So I'm sorry, by the time we're reporting this, it's too late to get your hands on one.
That is amazing.
Well, it's especially amazing when you look at the fine print. And that's what really got me about this, is if you look at the bottom of the page, it says, and I quote, "Warning, use of this reproduction game cartridge, the product, on the Super NES gaming hardware may cause the SNES console to overheat or catch fire.
Oh, my Lord.
The SNES hardware is deemed a vintage collectible, so please exercise extreme caution when using the product and make sure there is a fire extinguisher nearby.
Wow.
Use of the product is at the sole risk of the user."
Okay, I want to see like a YouTube video of this thing just catching on fire.
I want someone to plug it in and play as Dal Seam and do a yoga flame, then have their Super Nintendo burst into fire.
How can you actually like say that? Like,
I don't know. It's crazy. Like, if I were Capcom, I wouldn't want to do that. I mean, I understand that maybe they have to say it for legal reasons or something, and maybe it's you know, probably not very likely.
Sounds terrifying.
But the fact that they say it twice, yeah. I mean, they mentioned it once, and they're like, "Oh, yeah. So be sure you have a fire extinguisher." Like, that goes beyond just, hey, this might cause something bad warning. It makes it sound like it's likely to happen. So, yeah, I will just stick to my regular original Street Fighter II cartridge. I don't think I need this fancy flammable version that IM8-Bit is selling. But, you know, it was, you know, enough for 5,500 people to buy them all up, and I guess they're not worried about it.
Kind of wondering if I would go back to, you know, my original Super Nintendo games, if there's this fine print somewhere. Like, has it just been hidden from me this whole time?
I don't think so, but yeah, it never pays to use a nice magnifying glass to find out.
That's amazing.
So, speaking of retro, vintage, reproduction Nintendo stuff, you know, sort of coming back from the old 16-bit days, what did you think of those three faux Nintendo Power covers that were made to promote the Super NES Classic that were given away at PAX.
I gotta say, they're pretty cool. They're really a cool throwback, really. It's a good idea, whoever came up with that.
Yeah, I like them. There are three different posters. There's Super Mario World, Link to the Past, and Star Fox 2. And to me, it, you know, kind of makes a lot of sense. I mean, Nintendo Power was kind of in its heyday back then. You know, those are never games that got covers just like that on Nintendo Power. I mean, the Link to the Past one was kind of one of those wonky ones with, you know, some mannequins or something. The Mario one was really, really cool. And of course, Star Fox 2 never got one.
Right.
But you know, these are some great art treatments. And, you know, if those actually had been legit Nintendo Power covers, I mean, it's, you know, almost believable, or, you know, in a way they're like even better than what the covers would have been from back in the day. So I could rather like it.
Yeah.
I certainly approve.
Yeah, they kind of get me right in the feels.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Although, along that same vein, just earlier today, did you see that on Twitter, Nintendo posted, like, it was kind of like a Crom trading card, Crom from Fire Emblem, and then it, like, had a Nintendo Power logo on it for no reason?
For a second, I thought you were talking about Crom from Conan.
Well, you know, I believe that's where he probably got his name from.
Shh. The lawyers don't want to hear you say that. No, I didn't, but that, I'm looking at it now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, these posters, you know, it totally makes sense. It's a great retro tie-in, but I don't have any idea what Crom and Fire Emblem have to do with Nintendo Power. But, you know, obviously Nintendo still has faith in the brand. I mean, I guess it was a big enough hit at PAX. They're like, sure, let's bring it back in some other way.
Huh.
So, this is clearly not the end of Nintendo Power, as far as Nintendo is concerned. On the other hand, it is almost the end of the line for Miiverse.
No, say it isn't so, huh?
It is so. On November 7th, Miiverse will go away on Wii U and 3DS. That means no more drawings, no more posts, no more messages with friends. Games that have built-in functionality with Miiverse, like Shovel Knight, will no longer have that feature. Games like Mario Kart 8 and Twilight Princess, where you spent maybe hours acquiring these Miiverse stamps, that aspect is now totally useless.
No.
Yeah. And that kind of bums me out. I mean, it seems premature to me. I mean, I know Wii U is, you know, beyond being on death's door, but the 3DS is still alive and kicking. So it feels kind of early to shut this feature down.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably people still playing Phantasy Star Online on Dreamcast, so it feels weird that they're doing this.
It does, and I mean, especially, I'm sure that there's still, like, probably a fairly active community around Super Mario Maker, and that's one of the games that used the Miiverse the most, to be able to, like, share your thoughts and opinions on the different courses. So, I mean, that's been out for almost 2 years now, but still, it seems like a real shame to just get rid of all that stuff.
Yeah.
And for me personally, I'm really going to miss just the ability to capture screenshots, because, you know, I mean, as someone who comes, you know, from a gaming press background, that was, like, so handy to be able just to, you know, hit that button and pause the game and take that screenshot. And now that feature presumably will be totally gone. I mean, it'd be nice if they replaced it with something that still lets you capture screenshots, but I would assume it is going away entirely, just like everything else. So.
You basically just replaced my job with a push of a button, you jerk.
Well, not anymore. It's gone. That feature no longer with us for those systems. On Switch, on the other hand, yeah, you're kind of screwed. However, you know, if there is a silver lining to this, you can obtain all of your history from Miiverse.com if you want it. You can log in, click the button marked information on downloading your post history, and then request post history. Just do that prior to November 7th, and then you will get a link after the service ends, and it'll let you download everything, all your screenshots, all your drawings, all your posts, just in case there's anything really cool you created that you want to be able to have an archive of. So, good news within bad news, I guess.
Yeah, honestly, if you're going to do it, that's probably the best way to do it. Hopefully it works out for everybody and they all get the things that they want and hope they have.
Mm-hmm. Overall, though, just seems like a shame to be cutting out the legs from under it so early.
Yeah, especially with hints of Miiverse in Splatoon 2. It's kind of weird.
I guess the Splatoon guys knew it was coming, so that's why they're like, nope, we're just going to do our own thing and you know, make our own sort of Miiverse type of thing within the game that has actually nothing to do with Miiverse, so I guess kudos for them for that.
Yeah.
All right. I think that does it for the news for this episode. Let's move over and answer a bit of a listener mail.
Better let it.
We've only got one this week. This one comes from TJ McCart. And he writes, I love the streamlined dive right into the news to leave more time for questions. I think that the chemistry between you and Pete is the best part of the show, and the questions really make that shine.
Say what?
So here's one for you. Take a Nintendo franchise, any franchise. Now take another non-Nintendo franchise, combine those two, and what did you get? I got Grand Theft F-Zero, a sandbox-style game where you play as Captain Falcon as he chases down criminals across sprawling cities in the Blue Falcon and punches them with his signature moves. Keep powering up.
Nice.
So thanks for the letter, TJ. And yeah, that is a great idea. Although before I get to that part, I do want to mention what he was saying about the streamlined show, diving right into the news. And that's always sort of been part of my mission statement, for lack of a better word. There are some podcasts I listen to and, it opens up and people are like, hey, how are you? What have you been playing? You've been watching Game of Thrones? I'm like, I don't care about that stuff. Just get straight to the podcast. And so that's why we always do tend to have such a shortened discourse right at the beginning. Let's try to skip over that, get right to the good stuff.
Plus, Chris and I don't really care about each other's lives. So
that's right. We hate each other anyway.
Mm-hmm. Part of the Nemi 101.
Yes, the part of the nemesis relationship. So I'm glad you appreciate that, TJ. Getting on to the second part of your question, though. First of all, I love your idea about Grand Theft F-Zero, and that's actually something that I've thought about for a long time. And, maybe I've mentioned on the show before, but, it seems like such a shame that Captain Falcon is supposed to be this awesome bounty hunter, and you never get to see him doing his bounty hunter type of stuff. So I was thinking, something that combines, F-Zero and Mach Rider. And you're just going around like this post-apocalyptic world and, catching bad guys and beating them up. And then, you jump in the Blue Falcon, you drive from spot to spot. So I love that idea. I hope that they someday do make a game like that. I mean, I want a regular F-Zero game too, but I think there is tons of potential of what they could do with Captain Falcon in his own action-adventure game like that.
Yeah, what's up with that? We never get to see him be a bounty hunter.
All we get to do is, seeing him kill a bunch of innocent Pikmin.
Now, who do you think would be a better bounty hunter, Samus or Captain Falcon? Well, I already know the answer to that.
I'm pretty sure it's Samus, but I would love to see them interact in that type of capacity. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Agreed.
So, as for his question, what, two franchises, a Nintendo franchise and a non-Nintendo franchise, would you like to see combined? Pete, you have an answer?
This one was hard for me. I actually, I hadn't really thought too much about that. But if I had to say one, I was thinking maybe something like Animal Crossing and Minecraft.
Yeah, that could be interesting. That could make a lot of sense.
Yeah, something that's a little bit more, Animal Crossing, they've done it a few times. The format's pretty much the same. I'd like to see something where you could do a little bit more level building and maybe, deconstruct, reconstruct level editor if that were possible.
Yeah, I could definitely see them adding some more Minecraft-like features to Animal Crossing. And I do always wonder how they're going to evolve that franchise. But going into a deeper level of customization could definitely be one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I had a couple of thoughts. The first one would be Kid Icarus of War. That is, combining Kid Icarus with God of War. And I don't mean making it all dark and gritty, but I just mean, having that kind of, 3D action-adventure game with the interconnected world and using those kinds of melee skills to, fight the bad guys and explore this mythological world. Now, then, of course, you'd also have your flying levels to get from area to area to keep it like Kid Icarus. But I think Kid Icarus could learn a lot from God of War.
I like that idea. I do want to see Pit be as angry as Kratos, though.
I do not want to see that. But in other regards, I think it would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other idea would be Star Tropics mixed with Tomb Raider, or you could say Uncharted. Those two games are pretty similar,
wow.
But I'd like them to bring back the Star Tropics concept. I mean, obviously, it wouldn't be like Uncharted where you're machine gunning, 80,000 people as an everyman, but you'd still have your yo-yo or whatever. But still, I'd like to see them bring it into the modern era and have that kind of mix of action and platforming and cutting-edge visuals and going on sort of a modern exploration adventure, but with a Star Tropics type of theme.
That's cool. I like that. I'm surprised you pulled the Star Tropics card.
Yeah, sure. Why not? It's been a long time. Wouldn't hurt at all to see that franchise come back.
Well, since you did too, I'm going to throw out one more.
Okay, go for it.
What if you had Metroid crossed with a little Dead Space? So you have a specific Metroid adventure that's a little bit more, horror-based rather than an actual key franchise piece. So yeah, it'd have to be a spin-off series similar to Prime, but it'd just be kind of fun to see her like have to explore a derelict spaceship that's full of zombies.
Well, I mean, there were kind of, you know, some ideas like that in Metroid Fusion with the bad guy, the fake Samus, who's chasing you around and is like kind of invincible and is like going to get you. And it sort of gave you that sort of level of fear and, you know, sort of a bit of a survival horror twist to where you're like, I got to run, I got to get away. So I could see something like that working pretty well.
Yeah, that was actually my favorite part of Fusion, but you're right. It is a cool mechanic that hasn't really been done to its completion in Metroid.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they could definitely do more with it.
Cool. Good question, TJ.
Yep, thanks a bunch. All right, I think that does it for this part of the show. So I think we'll take an intermission, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is our Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 6 months later spoiler fest. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 6 months later.
Bum, bum, bum!
Believe it or not, it has already been more than half a year since the release of the Nintendo Switch and subsequently The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, I know. That would have been September 3rd would have been the exact six-month mark, and it doesn't really seem like it's been that long. But it has been, and when the game came out those 6 months ago, you know, we've been waiting for it for a long time, and I think pretty much almost everybody was very impressed, and it certainly felt very much like, you know, this is potential Game of the Year material, and we were just almost overwhelmed by how much there was to this game. So why not? Let's take a look back, see how it still stacks up. What are our thoughts? Plus, at the time that the game released, we really didn't want to talk about spoilers. We kind of, you know, we're talking around some of the bigger events in the game, but we're not going to do that this time. This time, you know, it's gloves off, total spoiler fest. If you haven't finished the game yet, yeah, keep that fast forward button handy.
Yeah, seriously. You might just want to, like, skip this whole episode, but sorry, Chris.
So yeah, Breath of the Wild, what do you think? How's it holding up? Pete, how have you been progressing in the game? You finally beat the game, right?
Yeah, so I mean, that was kind of the catalyst why I suggested we do an episode like this, because I just beat this game about a week ago. And
oh wow, slowpoke.
Yeah, I mean, I was really trying to savor it, but at the same time, at a certain...
Well, it's understandable. The game is huge.
It is. I'm like 130 hours in, and I finally decided, well, you know what? It's time to just go give Ganon a whooping.
Well, you still did it faster than I did. It took me like 160 hours, but I put that in about 2 months, I think.
Yeah, I kind of got to the point where I just wanted to start playing other games more consistently. And I was like, you know, it's like you kind of make your decisions like, am I going to play Zelda tonight or am I going to try something else?
Yeah, totally. So you've been playing all this time. You finally defeated Ganon. You've finally seen almost everything this game has to show you. And so what are your thoughts at this point after playing for 6 whole months?
I mean, I'm still totally in love with it. I think it's still an incredible game. You know, it's definitely a different entry to the series than we've had recently.
For sure.
Right? It's a departure from Skyward Sword. It's a departure from Ocarina of Time. It's probably a departure of everything since, what, the NES?
I mean, it's unlike any other Zelda game. I mean, obviously it does harken back a lot to that NES title, and clearly took a lot of inspiration and ideas from that initial game. But yeah, I think it's fair to say there's nothing quite like it.
Yeah, and going back, have you been playing it recently? For this episode, did you play it at all?
I did. I did fire it up again and went back into the hard mode, the master mode, which I didn't really play very much of before. Mm-hmm. You know, I had started out, I had played a little bit on the Great Plateau. I had only done 2 of the 4 shrines there. Mm-hmm. So I fired it up recently and decided I was going to complete the plateau and at least get off of the plateau and, you know, see what else there was in the game. But that did not quite go as planned.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What happened?
So first of all, I left the shrine I was at and had to sneak across the plateau. And there's a freaking Lynel there, like right near the beginning.
And all you have is like a stick.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody takes like a zillion hits, even the weakest Bokoblin. So I was basically just like climbing along the side of the cliff, hoping that this Lynel wouldn't see me. So it took a while, but I was able to do that.
Nice.
You know, snuck past all the enemies. I got my my coat that made it so I could go into the snow area. And, I chopped down the tree, went to the cliff on the other side. There were a couple enemies over there, but mm-hmm. they were sleeping, so I snuck up on them and took them out while they were napping. Then I climbed up the mountainside, went to the other shrines, and, then I had basically accomplished what I needed to do. At that point, the old man shows up again, and he's like, okay, just, meet me at this certain spot, and I will tell you everything.
How'd that go?
Well, he wants you to go to the Temple of Time, and so I warped back to the starting point, the Shrine of Resurrection, mm-hmm. and so I was heading over there to meet him, and, it didn't seem too hard. There was nothing major in the way. There were no Lynels there, just one regular enemy, and he killed me.
Amazing.
Just one stupid, regular, low-level, blue Bokoblin killed me, because they have regenerating health, right. And I suppose I should have just ran away from him. But because of the terrain that we were on, it was really difficult for me to fight him. And as I would wait for him to get up and, approach me again, he'd like regenerate his health. So it just, the fight took quite a while and I got clumsy and I got hit and I died.
That's so sad.
So it's, easy enough to pick up where I left off, and I'm sure it'll be not too much of an issue to run past him and go talk to the old man and get my glider and hover down to the rest of the game. But, that could have gone a little better.
That's a good segue into this episode, because it's really, this game is full of those kind of moments, right? It's not very linear. I mean, it's almost not at all linear.
No.
And so there's a lot of these little moments that are specific to each player. So I think it makes sense to kind of walk through kind of what our takeaways were, what are your favorite moments kind of stuff. So,
sure. Before we get to that, though, I mean, just my general feeling overall, and I don't know if this is any different from what I've said before when we've talked about the game, mm-hmm. but I find it to be this interesting juxtaposition of absolute beauty and openness and this whole invitation to explore, and everything looks gorgeous and wonderful. And then on the other hand, it's also one of the most tense and nerve-wracking games. Certainly one of the most tense and nerve-wracking Zelda games I have ever played.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing you're playing in Master Mode where you know that you can only survive a couple of hits and the enemies are super tough. But even in the regular mode, it's throwing all kinds of things at you that are very out of the ordinary for a Zelda game. Whether it's, the Guardians, which, they make that sound, and you hear that, and it's horrifying. It's like, oh my God, I'm going to die. It's got this laser beam on me. I better run, or I'm dead.
Right.
You're suddenly mysteriously attacked by these Yiga ninjas, like out of nowhere. They just poof, and suddenly you're being ambushed. It's got the Lynels, as I alluded to earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And they are like super tough. They're like as tough as any boss in the game.
Yeah. Maybe even tougher.
Yeah, in some cases, certainly. And then there, of course, is the Blood Moon, which I don't know about you, but the first time it happened to me, it was like the freakiest thing that's ever happened in the game. it was like red and misty. It's like, what's going on? I think I'm descending straight into hell. Yeah. This is horrifying. It was like worse than playing Silent Hill.
If I was alone in a house at that point, I would probably scream.
Yeah, I thought, hands were going to reach out and just pull me straight down into the depths of who knows where. And later you learn that's not so bad, it's just respawning enemies.
Yeah.
So for the most part, unless you're right in an enemy encampment, which seems like it happens at least once to everybody.
Right.
It's really not that bad. But still, the way that they do it and the way they show it off is just so intense and kind of stress-inducing.
Yeah.
And then you combine that with breakable weapons, it just feels like you're never, ever
safe.
Yeah,
totally. No, you're right. That, you kind of nailed it there.
So it really balances those two things, just this awesome, breathtaking beauty of exploration and the fact that you're never safe and you can get KO'd really easily. And, you know, these spooky surprises just come out and get you, I think make for a very interesting and fun mix.
Yeah, you're right. It's funny because, you know, I can't think of another Zelda game where you, like, literally steer clear of enemies because you know there's a chance you're just going to die.
There is. And if you kill enough enemies, they just get harder and harder, too. So,
right.
But if you don't kill them, then you don't have the loot you need to raise up your equipment levels. So you got to balance that, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of business decisions I was making playing Zelda. Although, I feel like the later you get, and I'll talk about this later, but the later you get into the game when you get more weapons and, you know, better powers and stuff, it's pretty cool because you start to feel like a badass. You start to feel like you can almost beat anything. Of course, there's always that chance that like something's just going to like somehow hit you when you didn't expect it.
Yeah, I mean, until you run into, you know, a gold Lionel and suddenly you're dead without even knowing
what hit you. Or like somebody on a platform chucks one of those, you know, exploding barrels.
Yeah,
there's always like just random stuff like that. But
it's never like Wind Waker or something. Like one of the things I always loved about Wind Waker is how at the very beginning, you know, you are alone in the pirate's fortress and you don't have a sword. You sort of have to sneak through. And it's pretty, you know, challenging and nerve-wracking. If they catch you, they throw you back in prison.
Right.
However, then, like four dungeons later, you come back and you're armed and you totally feel like a badass. You've got your sword, you have to plow through everybody and take out the boss and rescue your sister.
Yep.
And it feels really empowering. And I don't feel like this game ever has that kind of empowering moment. Because even when you have your master sword, it's like, well, this thing's going to run out of power pretty soon. So it's never reaches quite that. I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it's just something I noticed about the game.
No, that's true. I mean, I had a few moments like that. But I guess in general, do you want to talk about your favorite moments from this game?
Yeah, absolutely. Our favorite most memorable moments. Do you want to go first or should I?
I want you to go ahead.
Okay. All right. So a couple of those I've actually already mentioned. One of those was the Blood Moon. And even though it scared the poop out of me, it was definitely one of the most memorable, most atmospheric moments.
Yeah. Especially the part right preceding like the cutscene. Because you're like, why is there like ash and the screen turning red? And there's that giant orb in the sky. It's like, and the music starts to go little bananas. What?
It's not even really music. It's just really an eerie sound that's going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really freaks you out.
Totally.
So, yeah, the first time that happened is one of my certainly most memorable moments. But on the other hand, on the opposite end of the spectrum, and I think I alluded to this on a previous episode when we first played the game, but the first time I climbed up the mountains in the southern area, I think probably the Lanayru province, and seeing the dragon like soaring through the sky and it played sort of that mystical sounding music, and it was dawn and just the way the light was sparkling on everything, and seeing that huge dragon just looking so majestic and swung through the air. I was like, oh, wow. Wow, this is just super, super impressive. That part really impressed me. And, you know, that's not something that necessarily everybody is going to see. I mean, everyone's going to see the dragons.
Right.
But, you know, at that exact moment, that exact weather, you know, I'm just lucky that I was able to get a scene like that. That was, you know, really gorgeous, and I loved that.
That's a good one. That exact spot, right? Like, standing where you were at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And, you know, pretty much every time you see a divine beast for the first time as well, it's got a cutscene and it looks really fantastic and horrifying and also, you know, somehow sort of majestic. And those parts are always, you know, really great to me.
Yeah.
As far as something that's more gameplay oriented rather than just being a, you know, breathtaking spectacle, I really liked the Yiga base infiltration, that part where you had to basically sneak your way through their base to be able to retrieve that stolen item.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and that was also very nerve-wracking too.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's very like Wind Waker-esque in the sense that it's definitely like a stealth mission.
Yes, totally. You can try to fight, but you will probably lose because at that point in the game, the bad guys have a lot more health than you do, and you know, when one of them sees you, they'll probably all gank up on you and take you out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was certainly a very, very tense area, but you know, once you learn what you're doing, it can be really fun, and of course it's hilarious. You can just distract them with bananas of all things. And are these guys friends of Donkey Kong or something? Do they steal his banana hoard? I don't know what's going on, but that was a fun area to go through.
Do you think that was a nod to Mr. Iwata's, you know, little looking at the banana in his hands? I know that sounds funky, but like, do you think maybe he knew that was going to be in the game and he used it? I don't know. That maybe was too
long. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah. Anyway, the world may never know.
Another gameplay part I really liked is the aerial attack when you're heading to the Divine Beast Vaw Meadow.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
The bird one. And of course, you get carried up into the sky, and by using your glider, you know, you ride the air drafts up and then you fall down and up and down, you go around and shoot these things in the air. And I thought that was a really, really fun part.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of those Divine Beasts, like, missions to get in were pretty fun, but that one I think stands out in my mind as well.
Yeah, they were all pretty good, but that one was absolutely my favorite. And some of the other ones I had, you know, a few mishaps that prevented me from enjoying them as much as I could have. Like going up against the camel boss.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I equipped fire arrows instead of bomb arrows by accident. Like, why can't I hurt this thing? And then I realized, so I just, you know, quit and reload my save, because that was not a lot of fun, because it's like, it just made no sense to me why I wasn't, you know, getting my hits in. It seemed like I was completely ineffective, because I was completely ineffective.
Right.
But enough about that. And then, of course, I guess an area that a lot of people really, really like that definitely stands out to me was Eventide Island. I know you like that one a lot, but, you know, going into this area, sort of having to start from scratch, yep, and, you know, just rely on all your innate abilities and sort of going back to the beginning and being able to take out these enemies even without all of your equipment and weapons was, you know, kind of a nice twist to the gameplay after you had sort of gotten to a rhythm of doing things a certain way. That was pretty cool in that it mixed up the formula a little bit.
Yeah, and it kind of just had that whole feeling of helplessness. Like, all of a sudden you're there in your skivvies and, you know, even to get, like, a single weapon, like that axe that's in the middle of a stump in the middle of a swamp is like, you know, that is like, how am I going to get that? Am I going to climb a tree and jump over? And then, of course, there's going to be lightning at some point, and the tree I'm on is going to get hit by lightning. You know, there's...
Yeah, and again, it's a very, very tense part of the game,
because, yeah,
you know, you can't save there, and it's like, oh, well, I could be really in trouble here. But still, regardless of that, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's definitely one of mine as well.
So that's all of mine. What else do you have?
So the one I have was when I took out my first Lynel. And it's partially because you just get this like overwhelming sense of accomplishment. Like, the first two or three times I encountered a Lynel, it just handed it to me. And, it's one of those things where you do your best, you get some potions and you equip the best weapons you can and the best armor you can, and then you just run out onto the battlefield and you hope that you have what it takes to destroy one of these things. And you definitely, at least for me, it didn't the first couple times, because, you know, if you're wearing, I think the hero tunic or whatever, you can see how much hit points he has, and it's like 30,000 or something ridiculous like that.
I don't recall ever encountering one with that many hit points.
Well, it was ridiculous, whatever it was. But
I think even some of the higher ranking ones are only like, you know, 5,000 hit points.
I don't know. The one I saw was like, am I ever going to beat this thing? I have no idea. But I might be getting that wrong. It might be like 3,000. But still, I was terrified. And when you finally do beat one, though, it's like so satisfying, because you just feel like I just destroyed the thing that has been preventing me from exploring certain areas of the map.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do you beat it, but then you get some of its weapons, which makes you in turn a lot stronger to take on other Lynels. So
that's true.
You kind of get this, you know, super sense of accomplishment. I think he has like a better shield than I'd ever had, and he had a better bow. It shoots like five arrows at once.
Yep, they've got some good stuff.
Yeah.
That was the best equipment, really.
Yeah, for sure. And then, in general, there are a lot of cool moments. I mean, I could probably make a laundry list of just amazing stuff, but just that feeling when you start to realize how big the game is and you realize that you've not even seen, you know, a sliver of it, and you start to wonder, like, what is out there? Just that, like, that almost that sense of, like, I have no idea what to expect from this game.
Yeah, that does tend to happen.
And there is something about that. I don't get that feeling in a lot of games these days. Like, you just don't play games where you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen next, or I have no idea what, how many towns are in this game, or like how many dungeons. So I don't know. That whole feeling was just kind of priceless to me.
That sense of wonder.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that's about everything for me. I guess speaking of favorites, did you have any least favorite moments?
I would say the fight against Thunderblight Ganon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's the boss inside the camel.
That's right.
Or horsey fatback, as I like to call him. But yeah, that boss fight was just very tough. And one thing about the boss fights in this game is they tend to be very organic compared to most Zelda games.
Right.
Where the other ones are very clinical. It's like, I watch the pattern, I take the shot with a certain tool when I have the opening, and okay, now he's down, now I get to fight him.
Right.
And it's sort of the same way in this game, but in this game, it's a lot more about the sword play and countering and dodging more than it is just coming up with a strategy with the right weapons. And in this one, he's especially tough. He's got those electrified weapons.
Right.
And if you aren't able to dodge or block, you know, you lose your weapons, you can take a ton of damage.
Yeah.
And the battlefield is just really awkward because it's kind of on these curved surfaces.
Right.
And, you know, you're running around all over the place
trying
to avoid these pillars.
There's like ramps and stuff,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that one for me was very hard in a lot of ways. And yeah, I had to continue a lot there. Definitely not a part I really enjoyed a whole lot.
Yeah, I also noticed that a lot of, you know, the boss fights in most Zelda games, they're very prescriptive. Like, you have to use a specific weapon and you have to, you know, do things in a certain order. In this one, it felt a lot more like, wow, like, I don't know if I should have been able to beat him with that or by, you know, just peppering him with bomb arrows, but it worked and I'm okay with that because he was really tough. So that is interesting that you mentioned that.
What about you?
I think for me in particular, I think that the dungeons were potentially a little bit weak in the Zelda series in general. And I kind of miss...
You're talking about the Divine Beasts?
Yeah, the Divine Beasts in particular. But then, you know, to a certain extent, the shrines too. It just never had that moment where, you know... In Zelda, up to this point, you could really get lost in a dungeon. And in some ways, that's a good thing that it's not like that. Like, you know, I think Skyward Sword kind of was over the top with their dungeons. Like, they're literally like...
Oh, I love those dungeons.
Yeah, I mean, they were cool, but they were almost like, you know, Michael Bay dungeons. Like, they were just, like, so overdone. So it is nice to see him kind of scale it back and kind of refine what is a Zelda dungeon. At the same time, I felt like you could complete them relatively quickly. And for, you know, a game that's kind of the size and scope of this magnitude, it's like, to have such puny dungeons, for lack of a better way of saying it, was a little disappointing. But, you know, overall, it didn't really take away from my experience, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, the size of the dungeon certainly didn't bother me. But yeah, to each their own, I suppose.
You know, the other thing that I would have liked to see a little bit more of in this game is surprises in the vein of like
surprises.
Red Dead Redemption, where you kind of are going along and like all of a sudden, you know, somebody begging for help and you get attacked, which does happen in this. So that's a bad example. But I thought Red Dead Redemption had a lot more of those scenarios and a lot more, you know, hey, follow me. And then all of a sudden, you know, gang of bandits attack you. I would have liked to see more things like that where you're just not quite sure what to believe. And yeah, I just felt like it could have done a little bit more in that regard. But overall, I'm not going to complain.
Okay. Now, what about weapons and runes? Do you have a favorite weapon or rune in the game?
Well, I mentioned this, that the bow and arrow you get from the Lionel is pretty awesome. So I might have to go with that. I mean, there's nothing like lighting up an entire like field of bokoblins with five bomb arrows at the same time from a high vantage point. You just like, you feel like you're just wrecking havoc. In addition to that, I would say, and this isn't quite a weapon or rune, but octoballoons are pretty fun when you get kind of creative with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, attach them to a barrel. You can attach them to a lot of different things, I found out as you play. And then this also isn't a weapon or a rune, but the heat armor, the armor you pick up in Goron City, to me that
prevents you from bursting into flame.
Yeah, to me that was just the coolest thing. Like when you put it on, you walk around.
Get it? Because it cools you down.
When you put it on and you walk around, it made you just think that like this game is the first Zelda game with graphics that are capable of this in 3D, and you really kind of get this sense that like Nintendo would have been doing stuff like this like all along had they been able to. You know, something like an ocarina is really just a palette swap of different tunics, where you kind of feel like, well, they maybe would have done more stuff like this had the processing power been there. But now that it is, it's fun to see this little, like, all the like little touches on the armor and the little flourishes. Just overall really cool. What about you?
Okay.
Any favorite weapons or runes or
My favorite weapon is really boring. It's the Master Sword.
Oh, you jerk.
Because I like having a weapon where it's not going to break on me. So, you know, once I got that, I would try to use that as much as possible until it ran out of power, and then I'd use my other stuff. And, of course, now with the DLC, I can make it even stronger, so that is nice to have around. So, yeah, and plus, it's, you know, it's a one-handed sword. It's very easy to use, unlike some of the other, you know, two-hand equipment that's really tough. Although, if you're talking about the disposable breakable weapons, I probably would also go with some of the Lynel gear. As for favorite rune, early on, it was definitely the bombs, like my favorite tactic.
Oh, yeah.
Was to approach an enemy. You know, he would see me, I'd start to run away, I'd drop a bomb in my path, and as he approached, I would detonate it and it would blow him up, and I would laugh and laugh and laugh, and I would do it again until he was dead. But of course, later in the game, it ended up being stasis, just because you can, you know, freeze enemies, and it's really useful, and, you know, it seems like you almost have to use it on the Lynels and some of the tougher bad guys like that, just to give you that little window of opportunity to, you know, avoid an action or get around an attack or land a few extra hits or something like that. I wanted to use Magnesis a lot, but it never really seemed to work out for me the way I wanted it to. Like, enemies would always notice if I was about to drop something on their heads or something like that. So.
I know, I'd always end up getting hurt myself when I used Magnesis to try to take out enemies.
Yeah, so stasis ended up being really, really helpful. Okay, moving on from there, what about a favorite character in the game?
I gotta say, I know this is kind of a weird choice, but I thought Cass was really cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is a good character.
Just kind of, you know, chilling out, playing his accordion, you know, and kind of giving you crazy hints and playing dumb that he didn't actually know what they meant, which I still don't believe. But, yeah, I just thought he was a cool character that I would like to even see explored a bit more. But
Yeah, now that you mention it, you're right. That's a really good pick. And, yeah, he's certainly one of my favorites as well. But I think my number one choice would have to be Mipha, the Zora champion, and apparently Link's lover, which I thought was a really unique and interesting choice for, you know, like his girlfriend, apparently, to be of a completely different species, to be a Zora. You know, I thought that was just very interesting. And she, you know, gives a very useful power as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, she seems like a good companion for Link. So, yeah, I think I would go with her. And, of course, you know, you have to give a shout out to her brother, Prince Sidon, who everybody loves as well, both the men and the women. So I'm surprised he is not getting his own amiibo.
I also kind of secretly like Daruk, I got to say. Props, shout out to him. He's just kind of a fun Goron. I think the Gorons in general are some of the coolest characters. So
I always like the fact they all talk like Hulk Hogan.
They really do, don't they?
What you gonna do, brother, when I turn into a rock and run wild on you?
That's amazing.
Do you have a favorite enemy or boss?
Well, it would be easy to say Lynel, just because they're so cool.
I hate the Lynels, just because they're so nasty.
And they are, but that's what makes them such a good adversary. But I'm actually going to say the Guardians.
Oh, I hate them too.
Well, I hate them
like
as well.
All my least favorites.
I hate them as well, but they just have this, they inspire like this fear in you where you see them.
Yes, pure terror, really.
It's almost like when you see a spider where you see it,
yes.
And you're just like,
well, they look like spiders. I mean, I don't think that's by accident. That's by design,
I hate
man.
How creepy they move, and I don't like that, you know, you're just parasailing through the air, and all of a sudden you hear, You're like, oh my god. Yeah. And then of course, like, you end up destroying your favorite shield.
Yeah.
Because that's the worst. You miss the timing.
Yep, you're off by just a split second and then that shield's gone.
Yeah, or like what would happen to me a lot is like I would equip a weapon that I thought was single handed, but it was double handed and I didn't even have my shield.
So you didn't have
out,
a shield, yeah. And then that's happened to me a couple of times.
Roast into flames and then it's unfortunate. And yep. I'm gonna throw out one more. I have to go with the Hinox.
Ah, okay.
Just because he's super...
You kind of look like a Hinox, so that makes sense.
He's super cool character design. He's also, like, as big as a house. And it's just fun to, like, have this sleeping giant that you can kind of, you know, wake up and wreak havoc on. Mm-hmm. And the one on Eventide Island is kind of the coolest because you really aren't very well equipped to take him out.
No.
And so that battle can be a little bit of a challenge if you're not ready.
I would just run and throw in bombs at that one. As for me, I would say my favorite enemy would be, well, if we're talking about a boss, it would be the leader of the Yiga clan, going back to that dungeon again.
Yeah.
Master Koga is his name.
He's a fun boss.
He was, and he was more like a traditional Zelda boss, where you have to watch the pattern, you wait till the rock gets above his head, you shoot him, and it falls on his head,
That's
and then
true.
You attack him. And it was, you know, very methodical.
Yep.
And it just felt like your classic Zelda, and I do really like that. So, you know, he wasn't particularly challenging, but I thought he was a lot of fun regardless.
Yep. Totally.
And I guess in the same way, you could say the same thing about the Molduga, you know, those big monsters that lived in the sand area. And at first, you don't know what the heck to do because they're so powerful and they're so big. And, you know, if you do anything, they'll just get you. But then once you figure out the trick to it, they become super easy. Just throw out a bomb, they eat the bomb, you blow it up in their belly, and you go to town on them. So both of those just felt like very, very classic Zelda enemies, and I love them for that.
Yep. Good calls.
If we're talking about a more traditional, just run-of-the-mill enemy, I will go with the horseback Bokoblins. Because one of my favorite tricks is to have them charge at me and use stasis on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they freeze in the air and the horse runs off. And, you know, then they'll come back to life and just, you know, sprawl on their butts.
Wow.
And I can go hack them up.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Oh, it's fun. You should do it.
Well, now, what if you stasis the horse?
You can't stasis the horse.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, but you can't. So, yeah. You can stasis them. I guess it's mean to horses. Yeah. So, yeah, you can stasis them, and the horse just keeps on going.
You just made me think of a moment that happened to me in the game, and it might have happened to a couple players out there. But there's a particular part where if you go through it, I think there's like a – oh, man, I can't remember where it is exactly. It's near the horse god. But if you go up over this hill, all of a sudden there's like 10 horseback bokoblins coming down the mountain.
Huh.
And I swear they just took me right out. Like, they even killed my horse. I didn't even know that could happen. Yeah, I mean, they just like,
oh, that's why there's a horse god.
They brutally destroyed me.
Dang.
Yeah, it felt like Braveheart and I was on the losing side.
Yeah, I can't say that happened to me. I think I remember a part with a whole bunch of them, but that they were just sitting there, you know, just chilling out, not didn't have to fight them or anything. They didn't charge at me. It sounds nasty.
Yeah, I say 10, it was
cool,
probably more
nasty.
Like 5, but it felt like a lot.
Okay, so going down our list of best ofs, you said you weren't really too keen on any of the dungeons, but do you have a favorite dungeon out of all of them?
Yeah, I think my favorite dungeon was probably the Divine Beast Varudania, which was the lizard up on the mountainside. I think from a standpoint of just like being able to kind of see him as you're crawling up Death Mountain was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was certainly one of my favorite sights.
And then, you know, also when you enter him, it's pitch black and you kind of have to light it up.
Actually, I did not like that much. So that's why he is not my favorite dungeon, because I didn't like not being able to see like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought there was something kind of fun about that and, you know, a good way to start that level.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
What about you?
It's hard for me to decide, but I think I would go with Varuda, which is the elephant.
Mm.
And he was the first one I did.
Right, me too.
And it took me a long time to get through because I didn't realize at first you had to get the map to be able to, you know, make him move the trunk so you could then change the layout of the level. So I was super confused at first, but once I figured that out, it's like, okay, this is really, really interesting. It has some really, really cool mechanics here. I'd love to play through it again, actually knowing more about what I'm doing.
Right.
Because, you know, that would alleviate some of the frustration I had. But overall, I think the design and the level of complexity would make it my favorite one.
Yeah, I remember getting stuck on that one and then realizing that you could like freeze the water that was spewing out of a faucet. And that was frustrating to mm-hmm. me. But the minute that I realized you could do that, that was also kind of that aha Zelda moment.
See, I had that figured out, but I still didn't have the map at that point, so I still couldn't move the trunk.
That's funny.
So that took me a while, but still, I think it would be my favorite overall. What about a favorite region, you know, area of the map?
Yeah. So the first area I really went to outside of the main kind of starting areas and Kakariko and Hatena Village was probably Zora's Domain. And partially because I really liked that they used that element that it's raining there. It wouldn't stop raining, and that meant you couldn't climb.
Yeah, that's true. And so, well, you could try. Well, I still climbed a little bit.
You could try. But yeah, they
I was pretty good at it.
They kind of did this good job of navigating you up this predetermined path. And I remember just at that point in the game not really knowing what to expect from the rest of the world. And just thinking, like, how cool is this that I'm going to Zora's Domain? I am along this path full of bad guys, and then I'm, like, getting to this new area, a new town. And I actually think of all the areas, I thought Zora's Domain was kind of the most well thought out. The other ones kind of feel a little less, I don't know, impactful. Zora's Domain
Well, I disagree on that, but I do agree it was a beautiful and well-designed area.
Yeah, it just kind of had this complete village look to it, whereas I feel like the other ones maybe don't, but, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, probably my favorite area would be the Tabantha region, and that's where the Rito village is, and that, I thought, was really amazing, just seeing the scope of it and how high it goes up, and I thought it was really, really impressive. I mean, in a completely different way from the Zora, of course. Mm-hmm. But I really liked the way that that village was laid out.
Yeah,
that was really, really cool.
Good call.
But in addition to the Tabantha region, I also really like Akala, which is where Terrytown is, that part in the northeast area of the map. And that's where, you know, that the wacky scientist guy is and his lab. And it rains there a lot, too. And I just thought there was a lot of fun stuff to do in that region.
Yeah. Did you like Robbie, by the way?
Yeah, that's who I was talking about, the wacky scientist guy. Yeah, he was definitely interesting. He was certainly a character, all right.
Cool.
Two more favorites to ask from you. Did you have a favorite shrine, and did you have a favorite side quest?
Well, I think my favorite shrine was the golf one. It was like a mini golf level. Have you ever played that one?
Well, I definitely did, because I played through all of the shrines. Oh. And I think I know the one you're talking about. That was actually really, really hard for me.
Yeah, so there were actually...
kind of frustrating.
There's actually two parts to that dungeon.
Yes.
There's a hole one and a hole two. And
yeah, the first part wasn't that bad, but the second part, which is pretty optional, if I recall.
Yeah, it was.
Took me a long time.
Now, did you actually beat it?
Oh, yeah, I did.
So I have not, and I want to go back and beat it, but the fact that it still lingers is, like, the one that I want to go back and do. I have to say, it's probably my favorite, just because I, like, wasn't able to beat it.
It took a lot of tries and a lot of luck. I'm not sure how I ever did it, but
I just got tired of burning through my weapons.
Yeah, I think that's what happened was I would just, you know, quit and restart once I ran out of stuff. Like, nope, this isn't going to work at all. I got to try again.
I'm going to go watch a YouTube video and then try it again.
But yeah, I definitely remember that one. But it was not one of my favorites. In fact, that kind of, like I said, found it to be somewhat frustrating. My favorite one was this one shrine that's kind of just like a miniature dungeon that combined sort of everything. I think it was called the Cam Yatak Shrine. I want to say it was like almost right in the middle of the map.
All right, you're just showing off that you know the name.
I wrote it down in my notes.
You jerk.
But as I recall, you have to use all your powers and you also have to do combat, but there's parts where you use bombs, you use stasis, you use magnesis, and you have to fight a couple of, you know, mini guardians in between. So it was like sort of the complete package where it sort of tested everything. Again, it wasn't too tough or anything like that, but it had probably the most variety of any dungeon and tested you in a whole number of different ways.
Now, did you ever have the moment where you realized that Mipha's Grace doesn't work inside a shrine?
I think that did occur to me, you know, probably after I got it, I went back to tackle one of the combat dungeons.
Yeah.
You know, the excessive test of strength or whatever.
Yeah.
And noticed it was no longer available. But, you know, it wasn't too much of a problem.
Show off. I think you also mentioned what my favorite side quest was.
Right.
I actually thought that the entry to Gerudo Town was actually really fun.
Oh, because you like cross-dressing.
Well, no, but it was just this kind of funny fetch quest that you didn't really understand what was going to happen. And then, you know, lo and behold, Link's a cross-dresser.
You know, I always thought that part was kind of weird because everywhere else in the game, it's very open and you can just sort of do whatever you want to get there. You can brute force your way, like you were saying, you know, you can't really, are you supposed to beat this enemy by just shooting with bomb arrows? No, well, you can do it anyway. And in this, you had to do that. Mm-hmm. That was your only option. You couldn't sneak in some other way. I was convinced there was some other way to sneak in at some certain time of day, or there'd be some alternate pathway through. But as far as I can tell, really the only thing you can do is have Link dress up like a woman. That's the only way you can get into the town. So in that way, I thought it was very interesting and different from, you know, almost everything else in the game. And, you know, felt maybe a little bit out of place, but I certainly, you know, I'm not going to complain that it's in there or that you enjoyed that part or anything.
What about you? What was your favorite side quest?
Mine, I guess, would also be in the Gerudo area. Oh. It would probably be the Medicinal Malduga side quest because, you know, going back to what I was saying about that bad guy earlier, I just really enjoyed tracking them down and defeating them. And so that was a fun one to do because, you know, it seems so intimidating at first, but that's like, ha ha, I found it out. And it was one of those great aha Zelda moments.
Now, can you say that five times fast? Medicinal Malduga?
Can you say it once fast?
No, I can't.
Medicinal Malduga? No, I'm not even going to try.
So, Chris, I mean, we've covered a lot here, I do have to ask, if you could change anything about the game, what would it be?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would add the ability to ride a moose. You can ride bears, you can ride deer, you can even ride, like, skeleton monsters, but for some reason, you apparently cannot ride a moose. So I would really want to have that be put in there.
Well, you have to be Canadian to ride a moose.
Well, you know, I think Link's close enough. Maybe they'll add that in as part of the second round of Zelda DLC. I really want to be able to ride a moose. And then I think I would also add in like a relaxed mode, a casual mode. You know, it's nice they put in this master mode for if you really want to have a challenge. But I kind of think that it'd be nice to include a lower difficulty. I mean, I've already played through the game as it was meant to be played through. I've seen all of the enemies and obstacles and overcome all the challenges. And now I feel like if I want to replay this game, it'd be nice to just do it a little more casually where I don't have to worry about all the imminent defeat we were talking about earlier. So I kind of think that would be a nice option once you've beat the game or maybe as some DLC or something like that.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm sure that for some players it would be maybe the only way they'll get through the game because it is pretty tough.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I never even thought about that, but you're right. It would be kind of fun if you could just go around exploring the countryside and not have to worry about just getting murked by a zombified horseback rider.
Yeah. So what about you? What would you change, if anything?
You know, thinking about it, one thing that I was really hoping would be in here was the idea of like having a quest spawn from a drop. So you actually attack an enemy and then all of a sudden he drops something and it's like a note or it's you know, a direction to a cave or...
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
I just thought it would be kind of fun if there were quests that you could only get from fighting enemies, because that way you just, you know, you'd have an incentive, one more surprise to get from random enemies.
Yeah, I suppose so. That would be cool. It's a good idea.
I would also, you know, kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but just more random events. Yeah, you know, I thought if there could just be a few more things that happen randomly. And then lastly would be locations. I thought that in general, there were some cool towns and there was, you know, some cool areas. But I thought that there really were, like if you go to Goron City, there's just not that much stuff around. Like, if you're in sort of the Great Plains near the Stark Great Plateau area, there's a lot of Koroks you can find and there's a lot of just stuff going on around every corner. You get up to Death Mountain and it's just like a desert. And then you get to Gerudo.
Or a volcano.
You get to the Gerudo area and it is a desert. And there just, like, wasn't as much stuff. I would just like to see a little bit more, like, you know, I kind of wanted a hustle and bustle of, like, a castle marketplace. Just wanted to see a little bit more of that, but, you know, I'm kind of picking nits over here.
Yeah, I certainly didn't have any problem with what was in there. I thought there were, I mean, there was quite a few towns. There was, what, like, six or something like that? Yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job filling up those landscapes. But, yeah, I can't blame you for wanting more.
Cool. And then what else about this game drove you nuts? Was there anything that actually like just made you crazy?
Well, crazy? I'm not sure I'd say crazy, but I guess there were a couple of things. And one of those would be those flipping motion controlled apparatus shrines. I just don't think that they really worked properly. Now, maybe that's because I was playing with the Switch Pro controller, but I felt like it did not quite have a proper one-to-one as I was trying to rotate these things around. And I just always felt that those just did not function quite right. I'd also say that the optional horse quests, the obstacle course, and the shooting range, oh man, I still haven't completed those. Those were really freaking tough and frustrating. Oh, I guess this one is as close to driving me nuts as anything. The fact that you cannot have 3 full stamina wheels and a full 30 hearts.
Wait.
It just feels wrong.
Wait, what?
Like,
is that true?
Yeah, if you do all 120 shrines and get all the all the goods you can get from that, you cannot have your maximum health and your maximum stamina.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That feels like that would just like destroy somebody with ADHD.
I know, totally. So I'm almost there. I'm like just on the cusp. Like, why can't you do that? So wow. I wonder if there's going to be 12 more spirit orbs to collect in the second round of DLC so that you can max out both your stamina wheels and your heart containers at that time.
Yeah, who knows?
So what about you? Now that you know about that, that's driving you crazy too, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought the labyrinths were a little bit nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of stuff was nerve-wracking.
I'm glad they exist. I'm glad they're in the game. At the same time, I was definitely so frustrated at the one on the island until I realized that I could look at the map on the map.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I think that's what kept me from going insane.
Yeah, it was funny, but that was kind of my last-ditch effort. And then, of course, I tried the other labyrinth up north and in the snow. And that one I beat by just going to the top and walking around.
Yeah, that's how I beat the other two.
Yeah.
Yep, I had the same thing.
I haven't been to the last one. I know it's down in the desert, but that's next.
Okay.
And then, honestly, the Korok seeds, like, really? There's 900? Like, that's not fair or fun or...
Well, the reason that there's so many is because you don't need them all.
Right.
That's the thing, is that they don't expect you to hunt down every single one.
Right.
If you do, then, that's great, so be it. But the reason there are so many is so you can be like, okay, well, I've got 400, and that's all I really need. I don't have to worry about the other 500 or whatever number it is. But, yeah, if you get, like, half of them, then I think you're going to max out your abilities. And after that, it's just gravy, so you don't have to worry about it. But I think that's why they made so many, is so you don't have to hunt them all down.
Right.
But again, if you're obsessive about it, then I can see how it could be a problem.
All right, I can see that. But conversely, I love the guy who actually grants you the extra spaces in your inventory.
Maraca guy?
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Yep, I can understand why you'd relate to him.
He kind of looks like you, actually.
Yeah, except I don't like when people give me collections of poop.
That really is what they're doing, isn't it?
I believe it is Korok poop, yes. Okay, so we've gone on a really long time about this. Before we wrap it up, what would you give this game? It's been 6 months. You've played a ton of it. What would be your score on NP rating scale?
I would give it a 9.5, a solid 9.5. It stands the test of time. It's a great game. I think that it is in some ways missing like those tiny bits of refinement. But that being said, it's an amazing game, and there's so much to explore and so much to see and so much to do. It's a great entry into the Zelda series, and I hope that they kind of keep that format going forward and just to see where this goes. What about you?
Well, I certainly hope they keep this engine going forward. I do hope in the next one it does not have breakable weapons, because that's something that really stresses me out. But yeah, despite the fact that I keep saying that the game is tense, the game is stressful, I still love almost everything about it. And even if I have little complaints, I almost don't see any way I could not give this game a 10.
Wow.
I wouldn't say it's perfect, but I think that the pros far outweigh any little tiny niggling things I could say about it. And looking at it objectively, there's really nothing it does wrong. It's just super amazing, and I would probably give it a 10. Yeah, I gave a lot of the other Zelda games 9.5, so I kind of feel like this one is probably a 10.
Well,
maybe a 9.5, but I'm thinking 10.
I'm speechless. I didn't know he had it in you, Chris.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I would, oh, wow. Believe it or not.
Now I feel like a jerk for giving it a 9.5.
All right, I think that does it for this week's big topic. That's the end of our spoiler fest. And boy, this has been a very long episode, a long conversation, so I think we probably should wrap things up. However, before we go, I do believe we still have time to continue our dramatic reading, The Adventures of Captain Nintendo.
Oh, goody.
Last time, following an explosion that knocked him unconscious, Nintendo employee Brett Randles discovered he had special light-controlling abilities. He also noticed that one of the game packs caught in the explosion had turned a strange green color, prompting his co-workers Tara Bates and Max Powers to suggest he plug it into the NES and turn it on. And now, the saga continues. Well, all right, Brett gave in, but don't expect anything. He then placed the still-warm cartridge into the control deck and pushed on the power button. But, as Brett expected, the monitor displayed only electronic snow. Oh well, said Max, leaving. I'll see if I can find a broom and help you guys clean up in here. For several seconds, Brett and Tara stared at the white, snowy screen. Finally, Tara shook her head. I told Max nothing would. Nothing is the absence of all else, and therefore incapable of action, the monitor interrupted. A beautiful green gem had appeared on the screen. Oh man, oh man, oh man, oh man, stammered Tara, almost in shock. What is this thing, Brett? I'm not certain if, Brett started. I am an electro-organic microchip educative reasoning active language device, the monitor again interrupted. E-M-E-R-A-L-D for short. Emerald. The Omni-Intelligence. My function is to absorb random information, assimilate it into a logical order, and determine reasoned conclusions. Is that impressive or what? Where did you come from, Emerald? Asked Brett. Search me, the monitor answered. As near as I can surmise, I'm a result of special microchips fused into this particular cartridge format. It's pretty comfy, actually. Is this for real? Asked Tara. I guess so, he replied. If it is, maybe it can answer some questions. Shoot, said Emerald. Okay, what happened? Brett inquired. The explosion a few moments ago. Sensors indicate a liquid in this area, with a temperature in excess of 108 degrees, caused thermal and precipitudes exchanges resulting in molecular eviluent disintegration. You know, I kind of thought that's what happened, said Tara sarcastically. What did that thing say, anyway? Yo, lady, said Emerald. What I said was, your hot cup of decaf got too close to Bright Boy's box, started playing Jiffy Pop with the chips inside, and caused a major, awesome boo-boo.
Wow.
Yes, there you go. We have now encountered Emerald, the Omni-Intelligence. And that's where we're going to stop for this episode. We will continue next time and see what happens when Emerald gets together with Brett and Tara and Max and see how things evolve from there.
I can't wait.
Yes, it's going to be very exciting, I'm sure. Jiffy Pop.
I never thought I would miss your back-of-box readings, but this is...
This is special is what this is.
Right, right. Special was the word I was looking for.
Anyway, I guess that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be swell if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Good night.
And our good friend, Mr. Scarecrow Birdie.
Got any Mepsipox?
We will see you next time.